all of us who are Christians have friendships with those who are outsiders. By that I mean those who are not members of the church. These friendships that we have may be with people with whom we work, they may be neighbors, they may be people who we golf with or do various other activities with. But these people are our friends. We know them. We care about them. And in many cases, they're good people. But for some reason, in all the time that we've known them, we've never spoke to them about our faith and about their need for a Savior. On Sunday morning, August the 24th, we're going to have Bring a Friend. And we're asking you to reach that person in your life, that friend who is not a Christian, but whom you know, you love and appreciate. And we're asking you to reach that person. Now, in order to ready us for that, I want to talk this morning about our apprehension in speaking to these people whom we know and love and whom we care about, but whom we've never talked to about the most important thing in their life. Now, I want to direct your attention to Job chapter 32. And this is going to seem like an unusual passage to start from, but you're going to understand in a few minutes where we're going. Job chapter 32, if you're there, say amen. All right. I'm glad you know where it's at. Job 32, beginning with the first word in the first verse. So these three men stopped answering Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. But Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite of the family of Ram, became very angry with Job for justifying himself rather than God. He was also angry with the three friends because they had found no way to refute Job and yet had condemned him. Now, Elihu had waited before speaking to Job because they were older than he. But when he saw that the three men had nothing more to say, his anger was aroused. Verse 6. So Elihu, son of Barachel, the Buzite, said, "I am young in years and you are old. That is why I was fearful, not daring to tell what I know." The book of Job has an unusual and interesting structure. It is interesting in the fact that the entire book of Job is set up in the first two chapters. In the first two chapters, Satan approaches God. Now, scholars and others have debated and argued about Satan approaching God, and brethren, it is absolutely useless for us to argue this. Satan approached God because the Almighty allowed him to. And the conversation that takes place between God and Satan is not a conversation that has been preserved for God's benefit. It is a conversation that has been preserved for your benefit and for mine. Now let me make this clear. The conversation between God and Satan in the early two chapters of the book of Job is a conversation where we are able to glean information and we are able to glean truths that we cannot find anywhere else in all of the Bible. So Satan appears in the presence of the Almighty. And God asks Satan, "Where is it that you have come from?" Are you listening? God did not ask Satan, "Where have you come from?" because God didn't know where he had come from. Are you still listening? God is omniscient, God is omnipotent, and God is omnipresent. What that means is that God is all-powerful, God is everywhere, and God knows everything. So God asked Satan, "Where is it you have come from?" so that you and I would know where he had come from. And Satan answers the Almighty by saying, "I have been roaming to and fro throughout the earth." Did you hear his answer? Satan roams to and fro throughout the earth looking for those whom he may pull away from God. Peter would say much later on in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8 that the adversary, the devil, walketh about as a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. That's what Satan does. So the conversation continues, and I want you to understand this point. God says to Satan, "Well, have you considered my servant Job?" And Satan says this to God. Satan says, "Does Job serve you for nothing?" Now understand what he was saying. Satan was telling God, "The reason that Job serves you is because look at what you give him. You have give him everything. That's why he serves you." What was he saying? Here's what he was saying. What Satan was saying is, listen, if you took away Job's blessings, Job would stop serving you. Now, do you know what that means? That means that the devil was telling God that you are not worthy to be served and you are not worthy to be worshipped simply because of who you are being the Almighty, but the only reason people worship you and the only reason people serve you is because of what you do for them. And if you strip Job of what he's got, he'll do what everybody else does. He'll walk away from you. You got it? Oh, that's deep. You got it? That is the reason that God says to the devil, "Have at it." God was proving to all of us that he is worthy of our devotion, he is worthy of our love, he is worthy of our worship, he is worthy of all we are, not based on what he does, but based on who he is, and we owe him everything regardless of what happens to us. Oh, we're neck deep in this. You understand? So calamity comes on Job in four stages. Job loses all of his possessions. The richest man files bankruptcy. The second stage is all of Job's children. 7 boys, 3 girls, 10 children, and all of his children are killed at once. I can't imagine. Thirdly, Job is afflicted himself. He is covered with what is translated to us a skin disease that covers his entire body from head to toe. And the fourth calamity that comes upon Job is from his wife, when his wife says to Job, "Job, you need to curse God and you need to die." So after all of this calamity, Job goes out to the ash heap, and he sits on the ash heap, and he's so devastated by what has happened to him that he sits there and he waits to die. But Job has 3 friends: Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. And Job's 3 friends hear about his calamities. So they come to Job in an effort to help him. Are you with me? When these 3 friends of Job get to him, they are so shocked at Job's appearance. They are so taken aback by what Job looks like and what Job happens to him that his 3 friends sit down with him, and for 7 days no one speaks. Nobody. Finally, after 7 days, Job speaks. Now follow me. Beginning in Job chapter 3 and onward, there is a series of speeches between Job and his 3 friends. Job speaks first. When he gets through, his friend Eliphaz responds to Job's first speech. Then Job speaks again. When he gets done, his friend Bildad responds to Job's second speech. Then Job speaks again. When he gets done, his third friend Zophar responds to his third speech. This cycle of speeches go on. Job, Eliphaz, Job, Bildad, Job, Zophar. This cycle of speeches goes on until Job makes a total of 9 speeches, and his 3 friends make a total of 3 speeches each. Then we come to Job chapter 32. And in Job chapter 32, we find out that there's another guy there, a young man named Elihu. And that this man, Elihu, has been standing there the whole time listening to this long cycle of speeches, and he stands there and listens, and the longer he listens, the more angry Elihu becomes. Elihu becomes angry at Job because in Job's speeches, Job is justifying himself rather than glorifying God. Job has been going on and on about, I didn't do this, and this shouldn't happen. And Elihu is angry because he's saying, look, you're talking about you. You ought to be glorifying God. And Elihu is angry at Job's three friends because they've just railed on Job. They've condemned him and condemned him and condemned him, and they have no basis to condemn him. Now here's the lesson, and here is the one truth today. Finally, Elihu speaks. And when he speaks, we find out that he has more understanding about how human hardships ought to be handled than anybody else who was there. When Elihu finally speaks, we find out that he has more insight into this whole drama than anybody else who's there. So when Elihu opens his mouth, his first sentence is amazing. Take a look at it. Job 32 and verse 6. So Elihu, son of Barakel, the Buzite, said, here's his first sentence. I am young in years and you are old. This is why I was fearful. The older translation says, I was afraid, daring not to tell what I know. I was afraid, so I dared not tell what I know. Brother, listen to me. That's one of the saddest statements in all of the Bible. You show me another statement that's sadder than that. Job, look at the circumstance here. Job's life has been turned upside down. Job has gone through more, and Job has suffered more than anybody ever before him. Job has lost everything. He's lost his possessions. He's lost his children. He's lost his health. He's lost his wife, has lost her devotion in God. Job has lost everything. Job is looking for answers. Job is looking for solutions as to why all of this is going on. And the one guy standing there who has the answers, the one guy standing there who can help him, the one guy standing there who Job needs to hear more than anybody else, he's afraid to talk to him. I was afraid, so I dared not tell what I knew. I was afraid, so I didn't say what I knew. Brethren, what's sadder than that is that same dynamic is played out over and over and over again today. It is. Just as Job had been absolutely devastated by the circumstances of his life, so mankind today has been devastated by his sin problem. Just as Job looked for a solution and an answer why all of this has come upon him, mankind is looking for an answer and a solution to his sin problems. And so Elihu, the one guy who could have pointed Job at least in the right direction. And you and I today, you and I who have the message of Christ, who could at least point people at least in the right direction, and yet so many times, like Elihu, we are afraid to speak. I was afraid, so I dared not tell what I knew. I was afraid, so I dared not tell what I knew. Job's life is totally disintegrated. But I was afraid to tell you. This morning, I am looking at some of the finest people that I have ever known. The first time I came here and stood here, I was still in college. Thomas Edison taught chemistry. First time I stood here, I was still in college. Some of the finest people I know are a part of this congregation. I am honored to be the one who stands here. Everywhere I go, people look at me and say, now you're at the Highland Congregation in Detroit. And it's my honor to say, yeah, I'm the fox who's at the Highland Congregation in Detroit. That's me. But brethren, in too many cases, we are afraid to speak about our faith. We are afraid to speak about our faith to people whom we know. We are afraid to speak about our faith to people whom we love, to whom we associate with. And what has happened is that fear has become the number one obstacle in outreach. And in too many cases, we say, like Elihu says, well, I was afraid, so I dared not tell what I know. Now, why are we afraid? Why are we fearful? I mean, why are we afraid to have a conversation with people whom we know, that we talk about everything else with? There are a lot of reasons for fear. Sometimes we're afraid because we don't want to appear awkward to our friends. Sometimes we're afraid because we don't want to be perceived as people who are shoving our values down somebody else's throat. But none of that is the chief reason for our fear. Brethren, the chief reason for our fear is that you and I are now a part of a culture where speaking up for God is looked upon as being inappropriate. That's the chief reason. And people today can stand up and talk about anything they want to. People can stand up today and talk about the vilest the most abominable things in all of the world, and in our culture today, not only is that acceptable, but it's cheered in most places, but in this culture now, if you stand up and say a good thing about God, you are quickly told that that is unacceptable and unappreciated in this culture. And so you know what? We just say, well, I was afraid, so I dared not tell what I knew. Now, I want you to leave with me the book of Job, and we're going to close out in 1 Peter chapter 3. Turn to the book of 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3, and let me explain this to you. In 1 Peter chapter 3, the letter of 1 Peter is a letter that is being written by the Apostle Peter to a group of Christians who were suffering because of their faith. The Apostle Peter is writing this letter, to a group of Christians who lived in a culture where the culture thought that Christians were odd. In this culture, the culture thought that Christians were strange. And so Peter is writing to Christians who are a part of a culture that is very much like our culture, where it's just not real appropriate to brag about what God has done. Listen to what he tells them. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 13. Who is going to do you harm if you're eager to do good? Basically, if you live right, people are going to be all right. Look at verse 14. But even if you should suffer, you see, everybody isn't going to treat you right if you live right. In fact, folk find out you live right, and they want to find out why, and they're going to see if they can get you to not live right. So what do we do here? Now look at it, verse 14. But even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed. See, how in the world can we be blessed if we're suffering for doing what's right? Let me explain to you why you are blessed if you suffer for doing what's right. Because if you suffer for doing what's right, it is a blessing, number one, because you are being identified with Jesus. They are identifying you with Jesus. Jesus is the reason you're living the way you're living. And if you suffer for being identified with Jesus, anytime you get identified with Jesus, that's a blessing. I don't care what the suffering is. Secondly, it is a blessing because if you live right and do what you ought to do, you're obeying God, and when you obey God, God blesses you. Man may curse you, but God will bless you. And at the end, it don't matter what man is cursing, it just matters that God is blessing. And thirdly, it is a blessing if you do what is right, because ultimately, that's what's going to lead you to salvation. Now look what he says again, verse 13. Who is going to harm you if you're eager to do good? But if you should suffer for what is right, you're blessed. Now here it is. Do not fear what they fear. Do not be frightened, but in your heart set apart Christ as Lord. Peter, what are you saying? Peter is saying to those Christians who lived in a culture like ours, where they were looked upon as odd and strange for believing in God, Peter says, you know what you ought to do. You know how you ought to live. You just live the way you ought to live. And if they shake your hand, all right. If they cuss you, that's all right. But you live the way you ought to live. You keep Christ in your life. And don't you be afraid of what will happen. Do not be afraid of this. We have to stop being afraid. We have to stop being afraid at what everybody, everywhere else, is going to think of us if we say something right about God. I'm not talking about being a moron. I'm not talking about being obnoxious with people. I'm talking about living your life every day as God would have you to live it to the best of your ability, and in the normal phase and conversations of life, if opportunity presents itself, tell people who you are and why you're living the way you live. And Peter says, do that and stop being afraid of ramifications. Now, if you speak, there are several things that could happen. If you speak, just in a normal conversation, opportunity presents itself. Whoever you speak to may agree with you. If you speak, what may happen is that they may not agree with you. If you speak, what may happen is that they will agree with some of what you say, but not everything that you say. There are a lot of things that could happen when you speak, but nothing will happen if you don't speak. Nothing will happen if you don't speak. I think it's amazing that Elihu stood there for 30 chapters. Job, completely devastated at every side. Four guys are talking, just shooting ignorance back and forth at each other. And the one guy who had insight into it, I was afraid, so I dared not tell what I know. And when he spoke, he gave his insight. And what he said made more sense than the other four. One more thing, we're done. One more thing I ask you about this. Put yourself in your friend's position. What do you mean? Here's what I mean. If your friend was here, the Christian, and if you were out there where they are, not a Christian, what would you want them to do with you? Just not speak? If they were here and you were out there without God and lost, would you want them just, well, don't say anything to me because you might offend me? What statement is sadder than I was afraid, so I dared not tell what I know? And how many of us will stand at the last day and look at those friends? I mean, these people we like, these people we run with. And they will look at us on that last day and say, look, you didn't even try. You didn't try. And how weak will it be to say, well, I was afraid, so I dared not tell what I know. We know better than that, don't we, brethren? We know better than that. This is a great place. I'm not down on anybody. This is a great place, and I'm honored. But we need to speak up. We need to speak up. And if they wear you out, you come on in here, and we'll hug and pray for you and encourage you, and then we'll go out there. And if they do it again, then you come back in here, and we're gonna send Odell out there and talk to him. And I'm going to stay in here and pray for you. Are we okay? We must overcome the fear of outreach. This morning, if you're here and not a Christian, maybe the reason you're not a Christian is that you've been afraid to respond. You need to get past that. Jesus Christ was not afraid to step out for you. You must not be afraid to step out for him. If you believe with all of your heart that he's the Son of God, and based on that belief, you're willing to change your life and live as he would have you to live, we're going to ask you one question. Do you believe that Jesus is the Son of God? You answer yes to that, we're going to take you, we're going to baptize you into Christ, you're going to contact the blood of Jesus, and you're going to come up out of that water to live a new life, Romans 6 and verse 4. If you're here this morning as a Christian and you've lost the way, you need to come back. Here are the people who love you. Here are the people who love you. Here are the people who go to the wall for you. If you're here, if you need to come, God help you to do that right now as together we stand and as we sing.